Into the Fold is a podcast on mental health issues produced by the Haug Foundation for Mental Health. The Haug Foundation is part of the Division of Diversity and Community Engagement at the University of Texas at Austin. The podcast is entirely funded by the Haug Foundation and produced by Haug Foundation staff. The views you are about to hear do not reflect those of the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hello, and welcome to Into the Fold, a podcast on mental health issues. I'm your host, Ike Evans. Today, I am delighted to be bringing you episode 106, Rural Broadband and Why It Matters.
We've got over 300,000 homes in Texas, which equates to almost a million Texans that don't have physical access to broadband. Broadband, which in its simplest form is high-speed internet, but as defined by the Federal Communications Commission, is a 25 megabit per second download and a 3 megabit per second upload. And unfortunately, the majority of those 900-something thousand Texans are in rural Texas.
According to the group Connected Nation, an estimated 926,000 Texans do not have physical access to broadband at home. Over 89% of these disconnected Texans live in rural areas. Broadband is defined by the FCC as a minimum internet connection of 25 megabits per second for downloads and 3 megabits per second for uploads, of which about 330,000 Texas households lack. Texas is 35th in broadband adoption among U.S. states and territories. Broadly, this is a matter of equity and economic participation, both of which bear on overall well-being in our state. This is especially true during this pandemic that we're still in, where remote work, remote school, and remote health have become the norm. Jennifer Harris serves as the State Program Director for Connected Nation Texas. She also serves on the Governor's Broadband Development Council. Wynn Rosser is CEO of the Temple Foundation, which is dedicated to increasing prosperity and well-being for rural Deep East Texas. I recently sat down with them to discuss rural broadband and its pivotal role in the future well-being of Texas.
Jennifer and Wynn, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to. Thanks, Monty.
Yeah, thanks for having us today.
So why not tell our listeners who you are and just how you came to be so passionate on this issue?
Well, my name is Jennifer Harris, and I am the State Program Director for the state of Texas for Connected Nation. Connected Nation is a national 501c3 nonprofit focused on connecting folks to broadband, particularly in rural areas. But truthfully, we want all Americans and all Texans to be connected and using broadband to improve their lives. We started almost 20 years ago in Bowling Green, Kentucky, working with Western Kentucky University, and started with working other states and became Connected Nation. Started working with the state of Texas originally in 2009 through 2014 during the state broadband initiative. And we are back with a full-time presence again as of 2019, thanks to the support of the Texas Rural Funders.
I'm Wynn Rosser. I'm president and CEO of the TLL Temple Foundation and also a member of the Texas Rural Funders that Jennifer just mentioned. The Temple Foundation focuses on 23 rural counties along the eastern corridor of Texas, right along the Louisiana border. We're about a 60-year-old family foundation. The Temple family owned a timber forest products industry business here in East Texas, and so we focus on the counties where they had residences, had business operations, or timber properties. And today we're focused on education, economic opportunity, health, human services, arts and culture, and conservation. And among the things that are highest priority to us across a number of those areas is broadband.
Exactly how big of a problem does Texas have with lack of broadband access? And how do we stack up compared to other states?
So as far as that physical access question, we've got over 300,000 homes in Texas, which equates to almost 1 million Texans that don't have physical access to broadband. Broadband, which in its simplest form is high-speed internet, but as defined by the Federal Communications Commission, is a 25 megabit per second download and a 3 megabit per second upload. So almost 1 million Texans that don't have the physical infrastructure. So even if they wanted to subscribe to broadband, they couldn't. And then unfortunately, the majority of those 900 something thousand Texans are in rural Texas. And it's a strong majority. It's about 90% reside in rural Texas. And then as far as actually subscribing to broadband in the home, Texas is doing even worse. We only have about 68% of Texas homes that are subscribing to broadband right now. That puts us at 35th among all states and territories as far as subscribing to broadband. So not only do we have a physical infrastructure issue that we need to work on, but we also have an adoption issue that we need to work on in the state of Texas.
Four of the five largest cities in Texas don't have internet, are low on the adoption list. What's that statistic you always say? It's really empowering.
Yeah, out of the entire United States, the National Digital Inclusion Alliance, which is another nonprofit focused on broadband and definitely on the adoption piece of broadband and the digital literacy skills piece of broadband, they do a study every year and they look at cities and communities with populations of 65,000 or more. And so they're looking at all across the country. And unfortunately, four of the top five least connected cities as far as subscribing to broadband in the entire country are in Texas.
And to regionalize it here in rural East Texas, and just in the 12 counties that make up the Deep East Texas Council of Governments region, we know from objective third-party analysis that half the zip codes have no better than 10.3, so 10 megabits download, 3 megabits upload. So going back to the definition that Jennifer provided, that minimum 25.3 definition of broadband, most of the residents in our 12 counties don't have broadband. We also are a region with higher rates of poverty than the state and national averages. And on average, rural East Texans pay 400% more per megabit than do residents of Dallas-Fort Worth. So we pay more for slower, less reliable service. And yeah, that's why it's so important to us as a priority in this region that we serve at the foundation, is we know that certainly now during this pandemic, broadband is important, but broadband was a priority to us 3 years ago. So this is something we've been working on for a long time. Same thing with Jennifer and Connected Nation Texas and the rural funders. This is something that we were really active on even before the pandemic. And so it's one of those quality of life things. It's another example of how rural people are left behind. And it's just a lack of investment in infrastructure.
Okay, so Jennifer, you're with Connected Nation Texas. So I am curious about your organization, how it was conceived, and sort of how it's structured and what its main, you know, strategies are for achieving its goals for rural Texas.
So as I mentioned, we started in Bowling Green, Kentucky, almost 20 years ago, out of a project that had really started at Western Kentucky University, focusing on rural broadband. We eventually became a national organization and then really kind of became, you know, a huge leader on broadband over the course of the state broadband initiative era, about 5 years from 2009 to 2014. Which was a nationwide broadband initiative. Dollars went to all the states and territories during that time to focus on broadband planning, broadband mapping, community engagements, and just, you know, general broadband advocacy work. Because at least at the federal government level, they saw broadband obviously as critical to you know, the future of America. And so during that time, Connected Nation worked in partnership with the Texas Department of Agriculture on those community engagements, on broadband mapping, on, you know, some local planning efforts to really, you know, move the needle on broadband. And then in 2019, the Texas Rural Funders asked Connected Nation to come back as a full-time presence to the state of Texas, just like we were during those state broadband initiative years. And our three primary focuses of work right now are broadband mapping. And that's really important because the data that's collected at the federal level through the Federal Communications Commission is not as helpful as it could be. So Connected Nation works to make that data much more helpful, much more accurate, precise, timely, all of those good things that's helpful for decision making. That's a big portion of what we're doing. And we're not just mapping rural Texas, we're mapping all of Texas. So that data is for everyone. It's done at the state level and at the county level. So we've got a significant amount of data for communities to then look and really understand what's going on, to advocate for themselves, and for state leaders to make decisions based on that data. The second part, biggest part of the work that we're doing is working directly with communities. The Texas Rural Funders have provided funds for us to work directly with 27 rural communities across the state of Texas. And that involves really taking a deep dive look at what's going on with connectivity in those communities. We start by identifying community champions on broadband in those communities and building a broadband team of leaders across that community. And we get a survey into the community to really understand not just a demand survey side of really, you know, what the community wants as far as broadband, but also how the community is using broadband. Are they using it for telehealth? Are they using it to support local business? Are they using it to go to school online? That question, obviously, a little bit different now than we would have asked a year ago. We're probably getting a little bit different responses also on our do you work from home question. But we're really trying to understand not only, you know, what a community wants as far as broadband, but what they're using it for, so that we can work with communities on their goals and priorities and then line that data up to come up with community technology plans for each of those communities, so that they can look at potentially federal funds that are available. They can look at public-private partnerships. Honestly, sometimes it turns out to just be that that data helps them make a business case to a provider, and we're able to get connectivity to some residents just because we've built that demand case and business case that providers didn't realize was there based on data not really being the best from the Federal Communications Commission. And the third piece of work that we're doing are conversations like we're having today, just general broadband advocacy and spreading the word on what broadband really is and what the issues surrounding broadband are. There's a lot more to the issue than just whether you have internet in your home or not. And that's important for us all to realize as we're planning to become more connected and get more houses connected in Texas, is really understanding, you know, the issue that each individual community, or issues that each individual community is facing toward becoming more connected.
Okay. Urbanites like myself have sort of come to take, you know, broadband access for granted. I mean, in my neighborhood, it's considered a scandal that, you know, the Google Fiber hasn't reached our community yet. But your organization, Temple, is based in Lufkin. I was just wondering if you could give a sense of whether, you know, folks out in East Texas, you know, just some of the concrete effects that a lack of broadband access in your region of the state has.
Well, you know, one of the things that I want to pick up on from what Jennifer just shared is the importance of planning. And so we are working in rural East Texas communities with Connected Nation Texas to develop community plans. And the leaders report back how important that is in terms of building awareness towards what broadband can do. And so for what was once considered a luxury, the last 8 months have convinced almost everyone that broadband is a necessity. But the important thing about planning is Texas is one of only six states in the country without a broadband plan. And there are federal funding opportunities for which we're disadvantaged because we don't have that state broadband plan. So that's one of the things that Connected Nation Texas, the Texas Rural Funders, are working on together with others to ensure that state leaders understand just how important it is that we have a state plan. And it's not about having a plan. Plans can easily sit upon a shelf. It's about doing the work to build the case, to understand where is access physically available versus where is it available but it hasn't been adopted. What do we need to serve more homes? What are the market incentives maybe that it would incentivize providers to extend service? What are the numbers of ways that service could be extended? It's not just about fiber to every home. There are other technologies that can develop broadband or can provide broadband speeds. And so it's really doing the analysis to figure out what is the problem we're trying to solve and how best to solve it. And then it comes with the bonus of having done that work that the federal government gives you more points for the federal funding opportunities, or at least some of them, where that broadband plan is important. So we're working on the community level planning here. We're supporting the state level planning. But why? Well, it's because broadband is 21st century infrastructure. It's not about streaming videos. It's not about shopping. It's about school. It's about telehealth. It's about economic development. You know, we work with a lot of rural communities, and one of the questions they say they get from site selectors that are coming in to look at some of the places we have where you can locate businesses in our region is, so tell us about the internet speeds. And if, you know, the corporate entities that are moving data back and forth, 25.3 doesn't even get it for them. They need much higher speeds than that. And so from an economic development standpoint, broadband is incredibly important. The school has got everyone's attention, the homework gap, that's one element of why this is so important. We have rural districts that last spring when schools were closed and everything went to online instruction, we have some rural school districts that were unable to deliver any content, new content after the spring break. Teachers and coaches and bus drivers performed heroically. They were taking food on the bus routes. So they would take students a box of food and a paper packet one Monday, and the next Monday they would return to bring another box of food and give a new packet and pick up the last week's packet. But imagine students, regardless of the grade, that regardless of their grade, who were unable to engage in new content for three, four months of the school year. And it's, you know, teachers and students that didn't have access. It's just not physically there in this particular district that I'm thinking of. And there are other districts like it in our region. So it's 21st century infrastructure. We deserve that as a state. And if we're going to participate fully in this 21st century economy, 21st century democracy, we have to have 21st century infrastructure to go along with it.
Okay. So Wynn, did I hear you correctly that the majority of folks in your region are currently lacking broadband access?
Half the zip codes in our 12-county region, the DP Texas Council of Governments region, do not have access to broadband.
Okay. So I guess so this isn't one of the questions I formulated in advance, but I just feel like I have to ask. With all of the different issues that, you know, that folks around the state are dealing with right now, it's how challenging is it to really raise awareness on the part of people about what it is that they're missing by not having broadband access?
Well, in terms of the public's understanding of the importance of broadband today versus, let's say, 8 months ago, say at this point, any conversation I have, it's just a given and it's accepted that it's a critical 21st century infrastructure. Jennifer and I were part of a regional economic development conference 2 days ago, virtually. But broadband expansion in rural East Texas was the lead session for that economic development partnership, again, that covers these 12 counties in the Deep East Texas region of East Texas. So, for us, it's no longer a question of do we need it, should we expand it, it is we must, and how do we go about doing that? The Council of Governments here, the Deep East Texas Council of Governments, is leading a 12-county plan. Again, they've been working on it for more than 2 years. They actually have a 12-county network design that their first phase, phase one, that they've just submitted grant funding to support covers about 60% of the households in Deep East Texas with a minimum 50 megabit download speed. And for us, it's about our economic future. It's about thriving rural communities. We know from that third-party study that I mentioned earlier that over a 10-year period, we can attract 10,000 new jobs. We can grow $1.4 billion in new GDP just for these 12 counties. And so the return on investment is solid. And that those numbers were pre-pandemic. And so we think there'd be a lot more population growth in this region. We're proximate to Dallas, we're proximate to Houston, proximate to Shreveport, really close to several of the largest cities in our region. And we think that people would love to work in beautiful East Texas, or, I'd say also beautiful West Texas or beautiful Panhandle or beautiful South Texas, if they could connect remotely. We've demonstrated that you can work from wherever you are as long as you have a good connection.
You know, in Texas, it's often more persuasive. We're a fairly conservative state, and, as opposed to making like purely empathetic appeals to give people some sense of the economic gains that we stand to get from the adoption of a policy. So, can we put a dollar amount to what broadband access would be worth for rural Texas?
I can't do it on a state level. Jennifer may have some state understanding, but in our 12 county region, it would be $1.4 billion new dollars in GDP. It's 10,300 jobs over 10 years. It's increasing population in these rural counties. And so we know that from this third party analysis, we believe that per capita income would go up about a percent across the region. So it's the median household income, rather. So it's there are real dollars attached to this. And every dollar we invest should return several dollars to the state's economy.
And from our perspective, Connected Nation Texas, we had some numbers pre-pandemic. I just don't even share them anymore because I know those numbers are even larger now, but they were in the billions of dollars. So I can tell you they're significant. But I think the more important question that we really need to investigate, and we've not really seen a study on, but is what is the cost of not having broadband? So we've always been focused on what are the economic benefits of having it. Well, what are we costing by not having it? I think those would be really interesting numbers. And if we could figure out how to do that study and really learn, I think that maybe even is more telling of a story.
Okay, Jennifer, this next question is for you. We hear a lot nowadays about telehealth and how broadband access is of particular importance for expanding telehealth services. So just based on your own learning and what you've heard from people around the state, how big of a game changer could expanding telehealth be?
Well, I think we've already seen how big of a game changer it's been. As the state of Texas has relaxed some of the rules that we had on telehealth during the pandemic, and the amount of people that are participating now in it that hadn't participated before, I hope that continues to progress into the future. Surprisingly, most of our rural hospitals do have connectivity, but if we talk about the amount of homes, that those folks want to have a, telehealth appointment with a doctor, that's where we're going to see more of a challenge. Is not necessarily, our hospitals or some of our clinics providing the service. It's residents being able to connect into that service. But we've seen, we've seen a major increase in telehealth during the past few months. And thankfully, that's been because of some of the restrictions that have been relaxed at the state level on allowing those services to occur. Unfortunately, before the pandemic, Texas is actually one of those states that was the most restrictive as far as telehealth. And so the pandemic has given us a chance to get rid of some of those restrictions and see that things are working. So I do think by seeing that, we're going to see a big increase into the future, but that is going to depend on more homes becoming connected so that those residents really can utilize all of the great things that come along with having broadband, including telehealth.
In our rural counties in East Texas, they're all health professional shortage areas, meaning primary care especially is less available than it is in other areas of the state. So we have 9 counties without pediatricians, 11 counties without dentists, 9 counties without OBGYNs. And so primary care, specialty care, all of those things can be enabled through telehealth, and broadband makes that more possible, especially when you think about the homes that often don't have broadband, also don't have cellular infrastructure. And so it's an infrastructure issue and requires an infrastructure investment.
This last question is for both of you. So what are 3 key things that people should know about rural broadband in Texas? And Jennifer, let's start with you.
I think the most important thing when we're looking at this problem is A, to not really define it as a problem, but a challenge, and then see that challenge is framed in multiple ways. It's not as simple as saying, fourth grader doesn't have access to internet at home. well, do they not have access because there's no physical access, or do they not have access because that home hasn't been able to adopt? And then when we start talking about the adoption piece, is adoption being prevented because of a cost barrier or of a device barrier or a digital literacy skill barrier or some other barrier? Oftentimes cost is the biggest barrier to adoption, but there's other barriers that go along with that. So really understanding the root of the problem, is it a physical access problem or is it an adoption or subscription problem? Could be both for some people. And then if it is that subscription problem, what is really driving driving the reason that they're unable to subscribe? So it's really just digging deep into that problem or challenge and understanding that there's multiple things at play here when we're talking about not having connectivity at home.
Okay, Wen.
Another important thing to know about broadband access is that it's an equity issue. So when you do a zip code analysis, the zip codes that have the lowest rates of physical access, the lowest rates of adoption, they tend to be low income zip codes. And so whether you're talking about a rural area or a core urban area, you have to look at this as an equity issue.
Well, I'd say really where this all starts from, one of the most important things about broadband for Texans to understand right now is that having good data and doing some planning is going to be what helps us get through all of these challenges with connectivity. Having that data so that we know where broadband physically is and isn't, so that we can address that specific challenge. And then understanding, you know, through the planning process, what the goals and priorities are for the state as a whole, and then for particular regions of our state. Every community is different and is going to have different goals and priorities. And so that's going to require a little bit of a different of a plan so that we can get communities connected in the way that they want to be. So really, the key to tackling all of this is good data and planning.
Okay, so like other non-mental health issues that we consider to be equity issues, you know, rural broadband has some pretty profound ramifications for, you know, overall health and well-being at the community level. Jennifer Harris and Wen Rosser, we were thrilled that you're able to take time out of your busy schedules to talk with us. And thank you for the wisdom that you've dropped. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Imani. Glad to.
The well-being of rural communities has been an abiding concern for our podcast. Here is a clip from episode 64, my interview with Dennis Mohat, formerly of the Hogg Foundation National Advisory Council, about how the unique characteristics of rural communities affect mental health and the implementation of efforts to improve mental health.
Well, I think that as a funder, you're oftentimes focused on organizational level change and organizational level collaborations. Mm-hmm. I think the first thing that you're probably going to change around is a much more of a person-to-person kind of relationship with the initiative, in that rural people oftentimes operate in a much more person-to-person kind of a relationship structure. And so, for example, when I ran a community mental health center in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, people were not coming to meet with the executive director of Menominee County Community Mental Health Center. They were coming to meet Dennis.
The episode is entitled Understanding Rural Communities. If you want to hear the full episode 64, I've included a link along with other related links in the description for today's episode 106. And finally, we are excited to be trying out a new feature on the podcast, the Listener Question of the Month. This is just our attempt at soliciting more listener feedback and giving listeners the chance to speak about matters related to mental health in their own words. And so for this first ever Question of the Month, we have asked listeners to talk about
how the impact of COVID on the holidays is affecting their mental health. And we're happy to report that we did get a really excellent response from Jessica. She recorded some pointed thoughts on the topic that I would like to share with you now. So take it away, Jessica.
A big hello to the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health. This is Jessica, and I'm responding to the listener question of the month about how travel restrictions and not being able to see family during the holidays is affecting my mental health. I think many people, myself included, wish that I could spend time with family this year, but I made a pretty conscious decision to think of it all as gravy. So gravy for me this year is a big acronym, which stands for gritty, responsible, adventurous, vulnerable, and yearning for connection. So for me, the G, gritty, you know, I just know that I've got to push through this time. This time won't last forever. And as Angela Duckworth says, grit is made up of passion and perseverance. And I know that I've got the perseverance to push through. I've had other things in my life that were temporary roadblocks and I made it past. And no doubt that will be the same this year. I also feel responsible. So both my spouse and I are the oldest children in our families and grown adults. And so I actually feel like I've got some, you know, the ability to help guide my family by saying, hey, we don't need to get together. I feel like making responsible choices and encouraging other people to do the same is something I feel really good about. And in fact, I feel really rewarded and I feel empowered by being responsible and doing the right thing for their health and for mine as well. I also feel adventurous. And in that sense, I'm really learning new ways to connect with family, trying to arrange some turkey bingo, things like that for Thanksgiving, but also adventurous and finding new ways to support the mental health of my family members and friends and certainly for myself. Also, I'm feeling a little vulnerable, like most people, like, you know, you don't want to talk about how you're feeling all the time. But this year, I think of all years, I feel like reaching out to other people, letting them know that you care about them, that you truly do miss them, letting them know that you are going to miss being together and that you care about them very much. This is the year to do that if you don't normally participate and sharing your feelings. And so this year I'm feeling extra vulnerable and like I'm certainly going to make those extra phone calls that I might not normally make. And at the end of the day, I'm left yearning for connection still. Like most of us, we're social beings. We love spending time with family, colleagues, friends. And at the end of the day, I'm still feeling like I'm yearning for some of that. But I just remember that if I maintain my grit, I'm responsible with my choices. I'm adventurous with the ways that I do connect with them and that I tell people how I feel. I'll be able to manufacture some of that connection on my own, even if it doesn't look like what it might normally look like. So how's my mental health being affected this year? Sure, it's impacting us all, but I've made the choice to make it all gravy, pour it on the turkey, do the best I can, and hope better for next year.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share it with everyone you can think of, just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others. So it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. And please leave us a review and subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, or TuneIn. Thanks for joining us.